Well, hello everybody. I'm really excited that you're checking this episode out because I had the privilege of interviewing my friend Carl for the show, and he's someone that I've been wanting to do a podcast with for a long time. Do you have that friend who every time you have a really good conversation, you just look back and think, oh, that should have been a podcast. We should have been recording the whole time. I have a lot of conversations like that with Carl, and so I figured eventually I just was going to have to bring the microphones over to his house and actually do the damn thing. So we did it, and I'm really excited because Carl's someone for me where he's nearly twice my age, and what's been great about our friendship is that he just comes in to remind me whenever I'm freaking out about something. He's like, hey, that is exactly what would be happening at this time in your life. It's totally normal. It's all good. And so he's kind of reminds me that whatever I'm going through is probably pretty normal within the cycles and stages of life. But also, he's someone where in his own life, he's kind of taken the spiritual journey, even the deconstruction journey, and he's really allowed that to just make him a better person. It's really affected him positively. And at the end of the day, it's like, what is all this for? What is all this kind of spiritual talk and existential talk for if it's not really making you a better, more kinder person? He's someone that really exemplifies that with his life, and especially in the workplace. And so that was really what I wanted to talk to him about, is how can we take some of these spiritual quests and spiritual longings that we have and really just turn it into making us a kinder, more empathetic person in our day-to-day lives, and really making it practical. And that's something that I often need help with because I get so caught up in the what the heck is going on here, what are we doing here conversation that I forget to actually be nice to people. So anyway, Carl's just such a good example of that, and I'm really excited for you to hear what he has to say. So here we go.
Well, I guess what I wanted to bring up to you, whether this is something that's in there or not, is this idea that, like, you know, obviously being more, let's say 10, 15 years ago, there's that pattern of, these are just all the things I'm doing, right? And churches incorporated, and being a good Christian is this idea of, like, you're going to try to bring it into every area of your life, right? Can you be, you know, the best Jesus that someone knows at work without being, you know, trying to preach at work? It's, they'll see it in your actions. They'll know us by our love, kind of thing, right? Oh, he just doesn't laugh at the off-color jokes. He just doesn't, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And yet now I feel like I'm not focused so much on repping something and thinking, I hope you want what I have, then I'll get to tell you about it. I'm just like, actually, don't ask me yet, because I don't know if I have this figured out. I thought I did, right? I thought I had it figured out, and now I'm wondering, like, oh, I think I just hit a next kind of level. And we've talked in the past about this idea of, like, you kind of think you've got it, but you're still always moving forward. And so you're moving out of that, this thing you have that you think you know, you're moving out of it. And you don't even realize you're moving out of it until all of a sudden you're thinking, like, that's sort of old thinking. I don't think that way anymore. But I had a good 20 years of one type of thinking. And so now I'm like, oh, geez, it's hard to be at, like, month one, month six, you know, year one, you know, or 14 months into thinking this way. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not ready to, like, have someone go, well, how do you think about life? And I'm like, way differently than I used to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the concept of beginner's mind, which is, you know, the idea that to approach every day, every situation, every quote unquote level of growth as a beginner. And there's that humility, even like a sense of naivete, that you're allowing yourself to come into things fresh, not assuming you know what's up.
Right.
You know everything about something. But to me, it sounds like by approaching situations that way, you actually are repping something. Because every time I encounter someone who seems like they are humble enough to say, I don't know, that's actually, that I respect that, and I'm curious, like, what they're on.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's like,
yeah.
That's like,
well, I guess what happens to me now is I used to think of things like the golden rule. Okay, you could say it's a biblical thing: do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Or you could just say it's just a life thing. People know about the golden rule. You don't have to be a Christian to know about the golden rule.
I could be
rule.
Wrong too, but I think there, I remember a Buddhist, poster. Right? I remember a poster when I was in school that was showing how like every religion and every country had their own version of the golden rule.
Yeah.
It's not exclusive to Christianity.
Yeah. Probably where's your fact checker? You're supposed to have your fact checker.
That's we'll have to hire later.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's like I used to try to I would map things back to and maybe that's pretty normal to my construct and even a word like saying construct instead of my faith and being proud of my faith and I call it my faith and you know it's this thing this powerful thing that I have that you should want to get to. Now it's like, well, that was the construct I was certainly operating under, right? And then I would try to map things back, so I'd see something and I'm like, well, that, yeah, the Bible says that. Like, all this stuff is just, like, I'm making both okay for myself, right? Like, yeah, this new thing is fine. It kind of maps back to that. And that was good. I'm still keeping hold of it. I'm not just ditching that and moving on to the next thing. So, like, for instance, the golden rule, I was pondering this the other day when I was driving, and I felt like, you know, the idea that, and it reminded me of, like, dying to self. So kind of weaving those two together. So what do I really want someone to do for me? My ego might want you to say, you're great. You're cool, you're handsome, or you're talented, right? That's what I want you to say. Then it feels like that's to do unto others. You know, say that to me and I'll say stuff like that to you, right? Like, but then I thought,
which actually is kind of transactional if you think about
yeah.
it. It's very like, you do this and I'll do this and we'll both kind of live in our rules.
Yeah, yeah, and then it works. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would say, yeah, that's called civilization. That we all decide on what the rules are and we live by them. And we change the ones that we think aren't working for everybody or whatever, right? But the idea of like maybe a no rules or just to like, what would it look like without all the other things in the way? Like, I just want you to see me and I don't, without judgment, which is a very Jesus-like thing, right? See me without judgment. And I think even then Christianity takes it like, well, I love you in such a way that I won't allow you to stay in this thing you're in. I love you out here. But no, just love the now me.
Right.
Love exactly me right now in everything I'm into. That's what I would want, right? That, I'm just saying that's what I would want. If I could have it, if somebody said, well, you can have whatever you want, I just want you to look at me and I want to feel from you that you love me exactly like I am. Right. And even noticing like, oh, your hair, like it's all exactly how it, but there's one that just sticks out. And like, that's kind of cool. Like even you like that. And I'm like, well, if you put that down, you would look better.
Right.
I was like, no, all of it, every single little thing that you have and what you're saying and your thoughts. And I know I'm scared about this. Like, yeah, that's good. I think it's good to be scared about, like, and not in a trite way, but like you really do love everything that I, so that would be just
acceptance.
This, yeah, just full acceptance.
Non-judgment.
Right?
Yeah. Which I've started to feel like one of my more recent kind of understandings and definitions of love is just when you're talking unconditional love, you're talking pure non-judgment, pure acceptance. And I believe that when we're talking about love, you know, and you talk about Jesus, or you talk about, you know, Buddha, or even the way people talk about Ram Dass and the way they felt this deep unconditional love around him, they say like for Ram Dass, for example, they say in his eyes, they saw that unconditional love by that non-judgment, literally just someone looking at them, being with them, not judging. So for me, what you're saying feels like I would want someone to take me as I am right now without being judged. And that's the kind of love I want. Not I'm going to love you, like push you into anything else because I think I know what's better for you.
Yeah. Because, and part of that, especially as I don't know how many references we need to bring in here, but as a two recently identified
on the Enneagram,
that'll be in the show notes. I feel I want to help people, right? And you know, in a negative way, that would be because then I'm more worthwhile and lovable. But generally, I do want to help people, right? And you think, I feel like I've been where you are, and I know what you should do next, right? And just to help you, like, you'll like this. Like, this will be great. You will. But it's like, well, where are they at in their own process of internalizing where they're headed next and whether or not they want it? So it's maybe more of just an idea we could talk about, but not like, oh, I know you'll be happier.
I think that's the technical happier.
Well, it's because if you're kind of in that Eeyore state, right? Then you'd be happier.
Ooh.
As you started to move out of it, right? And
never
then eventually,
stop.
And then eventually happier, just fully to happier. But in between, you're happier,
right?
Right. So
you were in a high-level improv group in another life.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Tie it back to dying to self. Because if I'm not dead to myself, I'm pretty into myself. And I'm thinking about myself all the time, and I'm thinking about, do I look cool right now? You know, or how do I feel? Or they say something to me, and I say something back quickly just out of my quick repertoire, but then I wonder, like, oh, that was a weird thing to say. I don't know if I... I'm just thinking about me all the time. What did I just say? What am I going to say? What do I want to do? What did I just do?
Self-absorbed.
Right? But if I was truly dead to myself, like, for real, yeah. Like, if you think of the word dead, right. Like, I don't think it's possible, right? But I'm just saying, if that's what you're trying for, then, like, I wouldn't even know about me. I wouldn't even think about me. So I would be fully alive to everything outside of me. So it'd be you, it'd be the plants, it'd be, I mean, everything outside of me is what I would, that's all I would be taking in, because I'm dead to self. So I don't have all this self-talk going on or all this self-judgment going on. I'm just like being. And so I thought it made me think of the idea of do unto others, because if you were dead to yourself, you would fully pay attention to me. And you wouldn't be like thinking your own things about how you might change. You'd just be taking it in. Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. That's, and that too, huh? And you're just, you would just keep giving me from you, because I don't have all this stuff I'm going to tell you about me.
Right.
I'm dead to me.
Right.
And so I know there's somewhere in the middle. That's an extreme kind of case, but that's just what I started to think about, is this idea of like, it's everything that you're trying to learn is really for your betterment. Like when Jesus tells you die to self, you think like, well, that's this trial you want me to go through. Like, I got to beat that boss now. For you really able to work on that and find this way to kind of die to self, you'd be so much more alive in your life. And it's like, I'm not going to tell you that's what you want. I'm just saying, I'll just give you the first, just die to self. And you're like, well, then you can spend your lifetime working on that. And you may have to. And you may have to actually die real to actually die to self, because you couldn't do it, right?
We all will.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think when I hear that too, like one way to translate die to self into a more like universal understanding, or at least something that I can digest a little bit more, because that is, if you think about it, is a pretty intense language. I think you can misinterpret that and think like, I need to like kill all this, all desire, and I need to kill anything that's unique about me. And I think I've interpreted it in that way. Yeah. Or seen versions of it interpreted in that way.
Right.
But I think the way that I feel about it now and the way that you're putting it, it's like die more and more every day to the idea of myself as separate, you know, that I'm the ego self, or that I'm the me that goes to work and has this job and has this certain amount of money that I'm used to making, and has this, you know, has like this, or it's social media or whatever, these identities that we create for ourselves. We can die to all those things in the sense that we can let those identities go completely, and there's still something left. If you were to let all of that go, you would just, like you said, you would just be with what is.
Right.
And there would be actually more peace, more joy, if you're just here with what is, rather than still buying into these identities and things.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know where I was starting from this. So the point was, not the point, a point was that, now I'm at this place where I'm not, like when you say, oh, I could get your perspective because you're this guy who's trying to, you know, you're in work world, you're in these other worlds, you know, and you're trying to be more fully yourself. And I used to think that meant be the best Christian I could be.
There you go.
Be the best version of Jesus that you would know. And like, and feels like when you think about just a good person, or it's like, man, I got to say Carl, this guy I work with, right? That's a goal, right? And that's super narcissistic in a way, but also it was just like, no, because a person that they feel like, that guy has joy, he's living his life, he's being himself, he helps others. It's like, I just want to be the best human, right? And then now it's a competition, and I'm going to try to be the best human. And then you see like Mother Teresa, like, okay, not like the best human. Like, get in the top whatever percentage of people that are just trying to do it right and not hurt other people and help people when they can, all right? So then... Anyway, I think that's a Christian ideal, but also a good thing. But then now I just think when I'm at work, I just think, I want to listen to what you're saying. I'm not, it's less about, are you going to think I'm this kind of person if I listen to you in this way or respond in this way? It's like, no, I just really do want to hear what you're going to say today. It's a different day. It's a new day. You've had experiences. Can I listen to you for a while? I know what I say. I hear it all. I'm 24/7 in here, right?
Right.
It's all me all the time.
Yeah.
It's a Carl show. And so I feel like I want to stop me for a minute and hear from other people. And it's like a, have a new way of meditating, right? Because you talk about walking meditation. It's like conversational meditation, right? Yeah. Like you talking, if I'm really listening well, I'm meditating while I'm listening to you, right? And so it's like I want to not think about me, and it's easier when you're talking. Just like I can't really think of another song when I'm listening to one song, right?
If you're really listening to it.
If I'm really listening to it. So if I'm really listening to you, I'm not talking in my head much. I'm not doing my whole game in there. And so I like that, and I realize it's cheating in a way because meditating sometimes is hard to just go sit by yourself. But if I'm around other people, it's like a good meditation, right? I'm just like, I'm just being here. I'm just listening to everybody. I'm just in the world.
Yeah. Well, and just like in traditional meditation, you would naturally come to points where you realize that you're thinking about something else or you've got lost in thought forms.
Yeah.
And so then you have to consciously bring yourself back to a space of observing and not judging those thoughts, but that the action of kind of, I like to think of it as this arm that comes and brings you back in. And I think my way of looking at it is that you can sort of work out that arm so that arm has quicker reflexes and is stronger.
Yeah.
So you do get lost and you come back faster and with more ease.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you apply that to this conversational meditation, naturally, you'd come to these moments where you were thinking about other things.
Yeah.
You're thinking about what you're going to say next.
Yeah.
Or thinking about what they're saying, but maybe not in such a way that you're actually present with them. It just made you think of that movie, and then you're thinking of the first time you saw that movie with your mom. And so it's like, if you can observe and be aware of those moments when you lose yourself and then come back,
right.
In a way, I think anything can be meditation, but a conversation's great because there's a degree of empathy there where you're not only are you meditating and having that experience within yourself, but showing someone that level of non-judgment and empathy is healing and is you know benefiting them on some level. So it's a pretty powerful thing you're talking about there,
right? Yeah. Right. And I've been practicing this whole time you've been talking,
exactly,
right? Which is amazing. Yeah. And honestly, because you were literally describing what was going on in my head, right? As you were saying, oh, you would still have to bring yourself back. I'm like, yep, because you made me think of something and I could latch on to like, I have a really good response to that first thing you said. I don't want to lose that. Now I'm half listening to all the rest of stuff you're saying.
And still wanting to get
the gold in. I'm trying to keep it, right? And then I was like, and then there's a part of you that's like, oh, let it go. Just let it go. If it was really important, you'll have it when he's done talking. Listen to what he's saying. And this is, you know, and that's what I'm trying to do. I want to be a beneficial presence in the conversation, but I don't need to design it. I can just let it flow when it's time to talk. But the brain really wants to like, this is our moment right here. Grab this one. Like he's not even done talking. Like I know, but this statement on top of that statement, that final thing is like, that's the stuff you're going to put on the posters under the stand with the one footprints, you know? I mean, and if you don't say it, nobody's going to get that.
Right.
And so this idea of like, of that intuition almost, or what is that, where does that come from? Is it in the moment? Like what was I trying to define? Like knowing, I don't know why things come to me and I have to turn them around a few times and try to mess with them. Right. So like I was thinking, what does knowing mean if you know something? And I thought, well, it's like the sum of your experiences. Like I know just because I've done these things, I've seen it 9 times out of 10. Here's what happens when you do something. And so you just kind of think you know. But then how much of it's intuition or just like that instantaneous, like I didn't know until right then. And then I assume like, where does that come from? Like spirit, you know, source, something you're just given. Like, here's what you should do. You're always getting some guidance or whatever if you're listening to that. So you get a sense of what to do. But if, again, back to the, if you're too into yourself and your talk, then you don't hear it. And then also the idea, if you already assume, well, I already know this, then you didn't think of the new thing. You're not hearing the new thing either because you already got it. You already have your plan.
Have you ever felt like you're in a situation where, because you're talking, there's knowing with experience. So, you know, people who are masterful at anything, a lot of it's just, you know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
Because you've struck that hammer in that way
so
many times that you don't doubt that it's going to react
right,
that way.
Right.
Then there's the knowing that you're describing, which kind of comes after, and then you know after you experience something. But I think, have you ever felt, or maybe this is what you're describing, you knew, like you had this feeling deep inside that you would understand or you would know when you needed to. Like this deep feeling that it was going to work out. You were going to make that shot.
Yeah.
You were going to make that leap.
Yeah.
Or you were going to understand what you needed to understand right when you needed to.
Yeah.
But you didn't. So it's like you knew, but it wasn't from experience. It was like deeper than that.
Yeah.
It was like a deeper soul experience.
I've been testing that since 11th grade, probably. Yeah. Right.
How's it been working?
Works pretty well.
Because you rarely hear that people who trust their intuition and lean on that knowing, you rarely hear people go, I tried it again and again, and it never worked. Yeah. Usually the gut has some holy, sacred, something other that, or not other, but really kind of, I don't know. It's.
I mean, as you get older, you decide to mix in some preparation, because I used to just literally not prep for things, right? Because I'd be like, I'm sure I'll be fine. Right. Like, I'm sure this will go well. It's no big deal. The words will come to me when I'm in the situation. No role playing, no writing things down, no trying to decide, what if they said this? What would you say to that? I was like, just figure it out when I get there, right? And that worked pretty well. And then I think just a little bit more prep, where you like have ideas about what kinds of things could be asked. So you kind of think about ways you might answer things. Then that conversation maybe flows. I don't know. You have something more to draw on, at least the way you were going to frame an answer. Versus maybe realizing, oh, I just talked and talked and talked. I don't know if I actually was succinct enough in my point.
Right. Well, I mean, preparation, you know, an idea that I've tried out in my own life that's been true is that we want to be spontaneous. We want to be intuitive. But there's also a level that preparation and structure creates a bit of a platform or a space for spontaneity and intuition to work within, rather than just a completely blank canvas. Because how many times have you showed up to a completely blank canvas or a blank Word document, and you don't really know where to go, but you're given like a prompt or something, and then, you know, and then you can fly.
Right.
So I think there's an interesting connection to preparation, or it's a relationship with preparation and spontaneity, you know, work ethic and intuition. There's that spiritual knowing, and then there's that experience knowing. And if you can merge the two, you can be, pretty high level in your output, which I guess helps me tie into, I want to introduce you and kind of explain who you are and kind of why, you know, we set this up.
Yeah. I figured it's best to do that a while in, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, because they're like, why would I care who you were if I hadn't liked anything you've been saying?
Yeah.
So I didn't need to know at the beginning, but now it's maybe a good time. If people are still here this far, then they might want to know.
Yeah. And you've been someone in my life where, we started hanging out, and I felt like you were in a situation where, like, you're working at really a really high level, involved in some really amazing projects, have this huge level of like responsibility, are leading big teams, are working with accounts that are worth amounts of money that are like mind boggling to me, and working with huge names, just working with like, chains that, you know, anyone like talk. I don't know if we can name these things, but
sure. T-Mobile, Taco Bell, Starbucks,
Taco Bell, working within the realm of advertising and leading large teams.
Yeah.
And so when I met you, I kind of immediately felt like, oh man, you're in this whole other sector of the marketplace than I am.
Right.
I remember actually one time you and I were hanging out, and someone started a conversation with you because of your Tesla.
Yeah.
And within like 2 minutes after talking about the Tesla, he asked you, like, did he ask you like how much money you made? Like, he didn't even ask you what you did, I feel like.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think because he said something. I don't remember how it got on that topic, but it was kind of a weird.
He was really forthright. Just some guy came up to you, started talking about your Tesla, pretty much was like, how much money do you make? And then looked at me and was like, oh, how about you? And I was just like, you don't want anything to do with me. I basically said, like, leave me out of this. Trust me, if we're talking about money and status as that definition, you don't waste your time with me. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, but it's funny because there's
a random conversation.
And that's never been this sense that like you haven't in any way been approachable to me, but it's more like you're more of like, you're like just me, in, 20 years if I'm lucky and I play my cards right. You know what I mean?
Maybe that's a good way to say it.
But at the same way, in the same time we've really connected on all these, like spiritual ideas and just trial and error, talking about some of the things we're thinking about, reading some of the same books, and kind of connecting on that way. I remember, one of the first conversations that we had about kind of like spirituality as far as what are some of these bigger ways that we're looking at the world and we're looking at things and like what is actually going on here.
Sure.
Remember we were talking about this idea of sunglasses and lenses and the idea that, you know, in life we're pretty much approaching and looking at anything. You said earlier with like the word constructs.
Right.
And we have all these different constructs or lenses that we're looking at the world through. You know, take someone who might be really identified with, you know, like where they're from in the world. So like you're one of your constructs or lenses with which you see the world is that you're from New Jersey or something like that. So like, say that's like that's like one layer of sunglasses that has a certain level tint on it.
Right.
And then they're also, they really identify themselves as a fan of this sports team.
Right.
And they're, you know, a Christian or they, you know, are really close to their mom or something like, you know, and all these, you have like a million layers of these ways that people identify themselves and these ways that people are seeing the world. And these are all like more and more tints to the sunglasses. So essentially the idea is that like at a certain point, if you're wearing 50 pairs of sunglasses, you can barely see what's going on.
Right.
You're just seeing what you want to see, or you're just seeing things through your own perspective without necessarily just being with things as they are. And I think, you know, it's always made me think there, part of the work is taking off those sunglasses, not saying that I'm not this person, but just saying like, I'm going to see what it would be like to see this world without this thing attached to it. You know?
Right. Yeah. And can I see clearer? Right. And I think of the same thing is like when you talk about where, oh, I've arrived at this level where I'm doing these high level things and working with big companies and everything. And it's just like, I think we all get into these, you know, whatever it is, 2 to 4 to 7 year stints of learning one thing or being at one company or whatever. And that's sort of your identity during that period. And you're learning so much about that. And so oftentimes when you and I would talk about things like, you know, Eastern religion or other things like that and different ways of looking at, you know, kind of what is all this, I was feeling, you know, behind you, like, oh, he's out there. He's been, even though you're younger, I don't know if it's necessarily age-based, because if you spent a seven-year stint thinking about that, reading about it, really digging into it, you've got kind of a, you know, a lot of understanding, and you're living in that construct, right? And then if you're telling me about it, it's like, okay, I may have a good ability from, oh, that reminds me of this, this, and this that I've done, but I've never really gone down that path at all. Then I'm kind of like trying to listen and learn and like, this is interesting. Really, this is, wow, this is really interesting. And I can, you know, I try to match it up with things I've already seen and go, that does make sense because I've read this, or that does make sense because I've read that. And so, yeah, I think you just spend time deciding like, I'm going to go as far as I can with this thing. And I think in a way, the whole time I tried not to be money focused, but I kept being amazed that like, I could earn that much money at that place doing that. And then you're realizing, if I went over there and I was managing this much revenue, I could make how much? And you just kind of realize like, well, I don't think it'd be that much harder. It's all the same tasks. There's just a lot more responsibility tied to it and a lot more weight in every decision. Same stuff, though. You know, I mean, it's hard to be a waiter, right? And you've still got to keep people happy, remember a lot of things, try to be an ambassador between the customer and the chef, you know, and like making them feel better about, they want to change this one thing, but I think it's just because they have an allergy. I mean, I don't want you to feel bad. Your work's great, chef, you know,
or there's like even like a stay-at-home mom. Sometimes I'll watch that from a zoomed out perspective and realize there is a masterful orchestration and like a ballet going on here of, okay, so this one kid's distracted, so I have time to do this project.
Right.
And then the other son or daughter has an art project that I'm helping them with, but I don't want to make it look like I help them too much because then they'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
And then when they're busy working on that and the other one's playing the video game, I can do some more laundry.
Right.
Oh, and then it's time for lunch and then all that. And so pretty much whatever you do within it, there's all this nuance and complexity to it. And it's unique. And again, that's why it's like there's no better or worse. It's just like pick your path.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so I do think that it's been, you know, my name's Carl, by the way. And Carl Swart. Are we using last names in this? It's interesting. like how do you introduce yourself? And it usually depends on the scenario. I'm so used to introducing myself in a work context, right? I lead solution delivery for our team, right? Right. Yeah. So what does that mean? You know, it's like right. I'm the person who I close deals, you know, right. I determine what they need and do we have enough people to do it and do we have the right level of people to do it and do they have the budget for it and how much time do they have? And so that's what I do all the time. And then you're like, is that who you are? That's just what you do for your job versus And so then you're like, introduce yourself as like, I'm just a human, right? Like playing this game that we're all playing, you know, and I want that car. So I got to make a little bit more money to get that car. And then I like making cars. So I'll make cars and like, cool. I want to buy those cars.
Yeah.
Like I like the ones you make more than the ones they make.
Right.
And you're just making all these choices all the time. Right. And then you still have to make X amount of money to be able to do the choices I want. But if I remove, you know, desire, which I used to think was like a bad idea, like why would you want to do that?
I think what, you know, has come up a lot in knowing you and has been helpful for me hearing you talk about is this idea that, you know, we have these essentially these little games that we're playing. If you're trying to figure out, you know, we're looking at like what's going on here in life. And we look at some of these smaller aspects of what we're all doing and how we're all interacting as people, whether it's like jobs or money. These are all sort of invented things. Money doesn't physically exist.
Right.
I mean, it does. You can't. But most of the money is electronic.
Oh, yeah, and so it's more of a concept. Around,
and even paper, it's paper that represents value that, again, doesn't. It's all invented, right? And so whether it's all these things, jobs, laws, these are all agreements that we all kind of make as a society. It's more so it's all based has to do with how we gather, how we think of ourselves as collectives and as society. And so this whole idea that, you know, your job, money, these are things to kind of remove yourself from and kind of go, okay, I can interact with this thing. In and of itself, it's not real, but I'm able to interact with it to the point that life just perpetuates through that society, you know?
Yeah. Our current 4-year situation is we really value, I want the market to go up. I want there to be jobs. I want other countries to realize, hey, we have a ton of people here that buy stuff. If you want to trade with us, you're going to give us the most favorable terms. And you're going to forgive all this other stuff where you've been charging us for too long. You just write that off and maybe we'll keep trading with you, right? Because my military is bigger than yours. And our business is like, we have a lot of dollars. Do you want them or not? So, you know, and everybody's like, yeah, do that, you know, and then you're kind of like, okay, we're missing on all the other kind of, you know, the stuff that makes you a good person or a good human or a good nation, let's say, right? So, and I think we do that in our own lives is you value certain things more than others, and then you're not really holistically valuing every person, right? And so I think as we get, you know, I guess the idea of us really arriving or getting to that point of enlightenment or whatever would be that you would really literally go back to what we said in the beginning is this idea of like, I want to see every person just for the value of seeing someone who is not me and is not you. It's someone other than both of us, right? And we can all at some point turn and like know every single person is unique, like a blade of grass or a grain of sand or whatever, versus this idea of like right now what's working for us is people who are really good at making money. And, you know, working in the military, you know, whatever the things we value, we're like, that's what we're prioritizing. So then you have the problem of like, well, you know, is a woman less valuable or is a black person less valuable because you've already put them in a category of, oh, they fit like this versus they are a unique human person that we have no idea.
Right.
Until we get to know them and listen, what can they bring?
Right.
That we haven't thought of, you know. Or that we didn't realize we needed even until we heard them talk and say, here's me, here's what I have.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's why the issues of, you know, race and gender and all these, you know, and inclusion and LGBTQ and all these different, like, problems are systemic problems because, like, what you're saying is these are based on really kind of built into the fabric of these quote-unquote games. These are ideas built into these games.
Right.
And so when you stop, when you value the game more than you value the players, then that's where people start being dehumanized.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When money is truly more important than people, then you know, then you've kind of lost it. And I think that's why, to me, there is this correlation between spirituality and recognizing when you're kind of playing a game, because it helps prioritize the important things, and it helps let some of the things that we tend to prioritize, let it kind of fall away, so that we can live more full present lives with what does matter.
Right.
Because how often are, you know, say, yeah, we're talking about a country that prioritizes money, and then as a result, people get lost in the shuffle.
Right.
But how many times have, in our own individual lives, have we prioritized money, a job, you know, and sort of our identity as far as that goes, and right. then we've lost connection to ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
In the way.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's been my pursuit, right? And these are all segueing into each other, I guess, but the idea that, like, so I focused on that for long enough to, like, oh, I can jump to this level. I can jump to that level, mm-hmm. you know, and then realizing, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this company is willing to pay me that right. to do what I'm doing.
Right.
And it is really important what I'm doing, and, right. and important in the sense of for this market, for this, what right. this company is trying to achieve. These are important goals that yeah. you're managing for them. Right. So I definitely want to do well at that and everything, but losing that job or having that job end, you know, made me kind of re-question, like, hold on a second. Like, were you really trying to just get as high as you could and make as far as money? And part of it was just like, can I do this? Like, oh, I can. You know, I just want to see if I could do it. And so, but what's hard is you get so wrapped into that, then it's hard not to make that much and say, well, actually now I just want to, like I said, be, and I want to see you, and I want to hear what you're saying. What job is that? Counselor? You know, I maybe, right? But if it's like, well, I'm still going to keep leveraging my current, you know, skill set to get a job, but what I'm really looking for is to experience life, you know, and so it's harder for me to decide, well, what would you want to do for a job? And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I just want to live, you know?
That sounds like a profound shift, because yeah. most people never get to the point where they say, I have this job, I have this identity, I've, you know, been operating under, like you said, increasing levels of responsibility and also increasing levels of money, which then your lifestyle alters, you get mm-hmm. used to a different type of lifestyle, which I think of is another game of it in
yeah.
of itself.
Yeah.
It's not really real because yeah. your lifestyle is just a made up thing,
right?
Because you could go back to the minimum and still survive yeah. and still yeah. be happy, right?
Yeah.
And so
my skin was itchier with that other soap though.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
And I just
invented,
you know,
very invented, but true. But yeah, so then you kind of, you operate at these increasing levels. Here you are coming to this understanding, or at least this feeling, that maybe what I've been pursuing, just simply the success, not that the success is bad or that these achievements or this feeling that people are trusting me with a lot, that's not bad in of itself,
right.
but the feeling like that's life
right.
versus that's
like
a game
arrived.
Within
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
You know, and when I call it a game, it's really just to give it its proper place and perspective, in that that's not life. The job isn't life, but it's something that you operate within, or you can quote unquote say you play, you engage with on a level that you don't take as seriously as life, capital L, but it's still important. It is, it's in a way it's your livelihood, but it's not life. So essentially your priorities shift from I live and I kind of identify as this person in this role to this role is a means to helping me live my life.
Right.
So that simple but
right.
subtle shift, I think, represents a massive leap in consciousness.
Yeah.
Where you're saying, what's the highest purpose?
Well, hey, everybody. I'm so grateful that you're listening to this podcast. If you like what you hear, if it's inspiring to you or thought-provoking, it just means a lot to me if you would subscribe, and that way you can stay up to date with what I'm releasing on a week-to-week basis. Also, it's extremely helpful if you could give this a 5-star review. It just helps make this content more visible to others. And, you know, again, if these topics are interesting to you, I want to let you know I'm also releasing music that covers a lot of the same ground, talking about spirituality and being connected to the earth and all that. And I'm releasing music on all the streaming platforms under my name, Jacob Roland. It's JACOBROLAND. and on Instagram and Facebook. The pages are Jacob Roland Music. So again, you can follow those. There's some cool content I'm posting there. It's going to be unique to those spaces. So again, thank you so much for listening. Let's get back to the podcast.
The new work, I've had four psychotherapy sessions, maybe three or four. And the reason I can't remember is because, like, I kind of got started and then thought, oh, I think I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, with one. I had one. I'm like, that was pretty good. Yeah. That was a good talk. And then, like, 2-3 weeks later, I was like, yeah, I probably should do this more regularly and just set up for some sort of regular thing. You know, I'll call them up again, right? I get another one set up, and then I'm like, that was pretty helpful. I actually feel pretty good. I don't set up another one again. So, like, over a six-month period, I've like, had four or whatever, right? So, but anyway, this idea that you've got, you know, trauma from when you were younger that you, and I bring that up and it'll make sense, but because you, am I acting in a way, like, to your point of, I'm just so into the construct, like, of moving up and I'm making more money and all this stuff, right? And then I said, wait, I want to live my life. Like, was that, were either of those sort of born out of the fact that, well, I'm trying to rise up so high because the trauma was you weren't valued when I was a child in my household, unless you were, you know, working the hardest,
right,
or the most talented at a sport, or, you know, you were just getting valued, right? And you wanted to be the one that got valued. Wow, you got an A on that? You know, way to go, sister. Yeah. And it's like, oh, man, everything, she's good. She's so smart. Like, I should work harder at school. It's like, I don't really like school, though. Like I'm really good at a sport, and Dad thinks I'm good when I play well at this sport. Like, I want to play more sports, you know? So it's just, you're just trying to be valued and seen, you know, and so I wouldn't call it trauma from the sense, because this is actually part of my trauma, is to devalue my trauma. But but it, because it's like, then you're weak,
right,
and you don't want to be weak either. So you want to be tough, thick skinned, right, hard worker. So if stuff rolls off you, or if you can come up with a quick, you know, quick witty thing to say back, you're lauded either by laughs or by attention or whatever. Yeah. Right. So then is my attempt to make more and more and more money, as people be like, shh, like, how much do you make?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to make a big deal of it. It's not a big deal, right? I mean, it just is what it is. But, like, part of me feels good. Like, yeah, people are like, can't believe you make so much money. Like, I can't believe I make so much money, right? And so now he's like, well, that's just a way of feeling good about myself. Feeling like, look how much worth I have, because look how much I can make, you know? And then when people make more, they're like, geez, you can make even more. Like, I work hard enough as it is. I don't care. This is my top. I'm good, you know? I'll just impress all the people that I can with this, and I don't care about the higher ones, you know? But it's still just that game. That's that game. And is it because of my trauma that, like, well, I can't just, like, who cares how much money you make? Like, are you comfortable? Like, you can afford your whatever home rent, you know, or you know, whatever you're living in your apartment. I mean, you can afford it. And so you're at that level. But then, you know, obviously all of us understand the idea of comparing. And, yeah, but I want what they have. And it seems nicer and whatever. So it's that never-ending game that we're all playing. And I guess that it's like, that's why it's hard to say things like this, right? Because I'm sure it's a lot easier. Maslow's hierarchy has always been fascinating to me, right? Like, I have the time to think, what's a better me look like? Because I'm not hungry.
Right.
And I'm not trying to get shelter.
Right.
And I don't have cancer,
right?
So I can think, what does a better me look like? Because I have the luxury of that. And then you could say, oh, and you're white. And you grew up in an area where you had access to schools and jobs and everything. So all those things contribute to me being able to hang around at the top of the hierarchy, in terms of thought, that I don't have to focus on all these baser needs. And I can be like, what do I want? Like, what if I didn't need money? Like, easy for you to say, easy for you to take this high paying job and go, I don't need so much. Like, yeah, you make as much as five people, right? So of course you don't need that much, you know, but I'm just thinking, like, no, I got used to it. I was spending it all, right? And so it's like, oh, how do I go back down to a much, you know, more reasonable amount and say, this is fine. Like, in this game, what am I trying to do here? I don't want or need yachts or, you know, all those things. So, like, I can live super comfortably. I can travel. I can drive. I can have conversations with people. You know, I can eat somewhere. I mean, you know what I mean? I can live on the earth and do what I want at a much. So I'm sure there's people that try that, right? There are people, there's books, right, where people have, like, how much can you still fully live with on not much money, right? Mm-hmm. Versus, like, all just sacrifice, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting you mention Maslow. If people aren't familiar, essentially, and I'm going to butcher this, but essentially Maslow, his hierarchy of needs is basically like, if you're, you know, if you're hungry, if you're starved, like, not hungry, like, you're hungry after you know,
it's been
an
3 hours
since
I've eaten.
No, it's like if you're starving, like if you're struggling, if food is a struggle, then like that's pretty much, you're going to be devoting yourself towards that. Yeah. And then once that's taken care of, then it's maybe you're going to be, you know, working on trying to get
I'm cold.
And then, you know, it just goes on and on to where like, I want this much money. I want this much money.
Yeah.
And after enough needs are taken care of, you're thinking about more existential, more abstract needs, meaning, purpose, all these things. So it's definitely not been lost on me that there's a part of my privilege that's allowed me to even have the time and energy to think about these sort of spiritual concepts when there are people that are too busy actually experiencing real pain and real, you know, systemic issues to even be thinking about these things.
Right.
But I feel like this concept still holds for me even with all that, because zooming out and realizing what's a game versus what's real, true, you know, on the deepest level, is, you know, talking about the mythical glue, you know, like you mentioned in Sapiens, anything that all these systemic issues, racism, these are all come at their origin, their ideas.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Sure. They've manifested themselves into physical systems or like physical material, you know, pain. But at the end of the day, these systems that allow for these things, that perpetuate these things, they're just concepts and agreed upon.
Yeah.
But
we all got together and decided,
right,
if we agree,
right,
we're the top race.
Right.
And we just all act that way.
But it's not,
true. It's not explicit.
Right.
You're implying it by what you're doing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that's where I think a lot of the latest stuff that people are trying to call attention to is that, like, yeah, unconscious activity or bias is just that. Like, you have to wake up first and look at it, and then you'll see. I'm not saying you're a bad person.
Yeah.
Just not paying attention to the choices and how you're making those choices, right? So it's kind of like that idea that it's like, that's why it's unconscious, because you just, like, I had that sense of like, of course I'm not racist.
Right.
Like, are you kidding me? Why? I'm not at all. But it's like, have you looked at the way you do this? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I could see how that problem. No idea.
Right.
No clue I was doing that.
And it's sort of built into these ways that we interact with each other. But in a way, it kind of gives more hope because, again, something he talks about in Sapiens is that we, you know, if racism was like a gene in our body, then it would take, you know, it could take thousands of years for us to eradicate, for it to like be essentially gone. Right.
Right.
But because these ideas or any kind of, you know, these like bigotry or anything like that involves seeing any other people or group as lesser is actually a culture. It's like an agreed upon sort of mythical agreement between groups, so there actually is a more hope that we can, you know, fix and deal with these things, because again, zooming out, it's not material, it's not like a physical thing,
right?
So we can actually, like you said, we can start talking about this, and maybe through this awareness developing, we can see much faster change than if it was like this, you know, physical thing,
right?
You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah.
But I only say that to say, kind of, you know, that the awareness of zooming out, looking at things in their proper place, actually empowers us, because I think that some of these movements have been empowered by the fact that we're zooming out and going, oh, these are just ideas that have been ingrained in our subconscious for so long.
Yeah.
These aren't. It's not like a literal mountain that we have to tear down,
right?
Because that would take some time,
right?
But if we can just,
how can we undo all of these years of, it's like,
but theoretically,
with willingness and attention,
right,
you could, but not everyone is willing and not everyone has the attention.
And so I think the same thing applies at any level of your life when you're able to separate what is real versus what's sort of myth. And when I say myth, I mean like, it's something that we've agreed is real.
Right.
It's the mythical glue. It functions between us as people, but it's not real. My favorite example to use is a job, just because we kind of go like, for a lot of people, that's like the number one priority in their life. Mm. And it's the number one source of identity in their life.
Yeah.
And I find that there's so much freedom and life really kind of renews itself when you can zoom out and go, okay, this is actually something I'm participating with, engaging with, a game that I'm playing in this larger thing that is my life. Just as we're saying that these harmful systems are these little, you know, agreed upon weird kind of myths that are happening in the middle of a much larger reality that is our world.
Right.
You know?
Right. We've talked about that recently, right? And I think it was even Pete Holmes mentioned it, but this idea I can't believe nobody talks about the fact that it's infinite space off this planet.
Yeah.
In every direction.
Yeah.
And we're just like, yep. Stop for a second.
Yeah.
It's infinite. We have not been able to see any end, any right. wall, any, and if we did see a wall, what's on the other side of that wall? There is no, you can't comprehend there being nothing outside of the something. So it's something forever, right? And yet we're on this little tiny planet. And if you're out from us looking back, it's like everything's happening on the dot that we know of, yeah. that we think of. Nothing's happening out here
right.
in the whatever the quintuple exponential to like of how much space we take up in the universe, right? But we're saying that's where it all happens. Everything that we know, every right. bit of reality happens on this little dot. And we're just like, yep. Like, okay. Anyway, have you seen that new girl show?
Right.
Like, it's like, oh, I know. I mean, the writing's so good. And you're just like, yeah, we're into this. This is what we're doing. And you're like, and she's just like, back to here. And you don't. And if you stop once in a while and go, that it's just immense. Mm-hmm. It's an immense thing to ponder.
Yeah.
Right. And then the people want to come back, obviously not want to, but you come back to like how important this is that we have it. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, I should be walking around it with awe and right. reverence that we're here and we can breathe air and talk and think of things and explain them to people and appreciate a flower. And you're just like, oh, it's amazing. Right. But you can almost get deer in the headlights, you know, cause you can just be like, this is all just hung here in the nothingness. Like, what am I even doing? Mm-hmm. Like, going to work every day and making money and I want to get a different car? Like, this is meaningless.
Right.
Like, pointless. Why would I do right. any of this?
Right.
Because it's all there is.
Right.
That we know of, right? It's so profound. And yet we can just go all the way down to like, do-do-do.
Right.
Run along, or even not do to do, but it's like, oh, I'm pissed off. I can't believe this stupid, you know, company keeps charging. Like, no, we're gonna have to sell our house. I'm serious, like, you know, and you're whatever, right? You're pissed. You're super into your this thing you've got, and it's just your world, and it's just so hard. And then that happened, and you know, so you're just in that, and so it's not like you're do to do. I'm clueless. I'm like, mm-hmm. I have so much to deal with.
Right.
I can't ponder that we're hanging. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, we know that. Yeah, let right. the scientists do their work. I'm trying to pay my mortgage. You know.
Yeah.
So you just can relegate it to like, well, that somebody else thinks of that. My job is do X, you know.
Yeah.
But I can find it to be, I think everybody can, but so profound and yet so anxiety producing mm-hmm. of like, so every single thing matters completely.
Right.
This is all there. Like I've made so many missteps and
right.
what am I even doing now? I'm just wasting time. I'm just like working at some job just to work at it. Like
yeah.
I should be... What should I do? I should explore the world. I don't know what I should do, but something bigger than what I've been doing, driving down the same road every day and talking to different people. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Then I want significance or something. I got to crave significance. I'm not even looking at this as significant enough.
What you're describing is something that has struck me as this really delicate, and then at times not so delicate, balance between kind of the extremes of what life is. You know, there are moments where when we're so blissful and we're so fortunate enough to be, you know, having some kind of experience where we realize, oh man, like we're here. We're on this floating rock in the middle of infinite, as far as we know, practically emptiness.
Yeah.
And we're lucky enough to be here, and we're aware of what's going on. We're conscious, and we're on this amazing planet that sustains life. And we're just, this is what we do, I guess. We just talk about what we're doing and we hang out.
Yeah.
And there are times that really, I just get to a place of awe and wonder that that's even what is of all the things that could have existed, that this is what is, that, that we're sitting here.
You experience things and then you share them with each other.
That's what life is.
Yeah.
And it's so amazing and so beautiful. But then there have been times where I've been depressed. I understand depression or anxiety that I've lived through, and I could understand how that to an extreme amount would cause people to feel so paralyzed in their life.
Yeah, I'd rather not feel than feel what I'm feeling.
Or life doesn't seem any more worth it than the possibility of whatever else that this
Well, if it's just the next thing to do, the next show to watch, the next place to drive to, then it's like, I think I know what all this is. I'm done with this version or whatever. Like, I think it just keeps doing this. There'll be different shows and, you know, then some, there might be a different car or there, you know, but like, this is it. This is what's happening. I get it. So then there's nothing to learn, which is a sad place to be. That's not true. But you sort of feel like, well, of course I could study a different language, but then it's describing this same stuff in that language and you don't see it as a benefit, right?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying is like you have on one extreme this appreciation for life that every second's precious. And then on the other extreme, you have this sense of like life's hard, like, you know, and that's real. It's not that that's not real. That is very real. And I respect and try to continue to grow my awareness in the fact that there are people that do suffer on a deep level on a daily basis. And they're not going around going like, what a miracle that we're here.
Sure.
But if you are fortunate enough to even catch glimpses of the fact that this is kind of a miracle and it is absurd and it's beautiful and it's a gift. And I like to think that these glimpses are all around us, but it's more that we need to open our eyes to them. Mm. But how can we take these glimpses of kind of, because again, like you said, you can't live there forever. It's hard. If I were to live my whole life in just awe of the absurdity of existence, I probably wouldn't get anything done ever. If you just lived 100% of your day, it's kind of like the idea of the enlightened being versus the bodhisattva. As you know, the enlightened being hypothetically is someone who is fully merged with kind of the oneness at the core of the universe. And the bodhisattva is the person who is aware of that and has had experiences of that, but also chooses to live and operate within the world. And so you could say that, you know, Jesus and the Buddha were kind of these bodhisattvas and that they fully understood and were aware of and present with kind of this unity at the core of reality.
Right.
But yet we're living and existing. For me, it's just this sense that there's a really delicate balance between keeping one eye on the fact that, yeah, it's a gift. Yeah, it's a miracle. Another eye on the fact that you are going to have days where you get up and just, it's hard. It's a sluggish day.
Yeah.
It's hard to get through the human emotions of that day, your traumas, your triggers, the things that naturally cause anxiety in our lives. And I don't expect anyone to, because I don't expect of myself, to somehow get to a place where I'm fully given in to the wonder and the quote-unquote enlightenment of it all, and yet at the same time, I'm able to just with ease go throughout my life.
Right.
And I think it's always a bit of a balancing act. It's always a bit of using some of the kind of the space that we've created in our heads of realizing it's a gift, realizing it's all wonder, and pulling that into the doldrums of daily life creates this sort of balance that actually, in my opinion, fuels the whole thing.
Right.
So it's not escaping your life where you go to work, where you have pain, where you have difficulties, challenges, relationships. It's not transcending that. It's bringing the transcendent into that as a form of transcendence.
It's not exactly related, but it makes me remember this idea of like, can I use my ego versus get rid of it
the mind is a terrible master, but a helpful tool or servant.
Right, right. Yeah, I just been because I think a lot of the focus recently, or for me anyway, in different things I've been reading, or is the idea of, you know, if you're going to get rid of ego, or at least notice it, right? At least notice that you're making decisions from there or whatever, and being maybe moved by that, and then a strategy to say that's okay, or yep, that's me being that way or whatever, but. You know, I used to think it was this idea of like, are we trying to get rid of ego, you know? But I feel like there's those times where it's kind of fun to be in the middle of ego. And certain times I can really recognize that.
Or useful.
Is, yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah. Helpful, useful. But
also ego is the one who, in a lot of ways, is the player of the games.
Sure.
And so if you got rid of ego completely, you'd kind of be getting rid of the games,
right,
in a way.
Right.
And you could do that. And that's honestly, that's where we're all headed.
Is that the monk life?
Well,
you know, we talked about that earlier.
It's certainly the monk life, which before we started recording, you said like, we can't all do that.
Right.
Because we're not all doing that. And if you want to be a monk, like, awesome. And I think that we're all headed to a place over whether it's at the end of this life or at the end of many lifetimes or whatever you want to look at it. I think we're all headed to a place where we've dropped all games and we've dropped all ego, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But while we're here, it's clear that the games are a part of it, that society is a part of it. At least here and now, if you're alive here and now, there's a level that participating within these structures and these sort of games is a part of what we're doing here. And we are here, so it would stand to reason that we're meant to engage on some level with whatever it is that we're, you know, we're here in this time.
I want to say that that's pretty profound, and I think it's funny because I don't know if we looked up the definition of profound, if profound means duh, right? Because sometimes it feels that way. Like, you say profound because it really seems, because you've somehow internalized something that everybody just gets, and yeah, we know it.
Right.
But you're like, no, but I mean, really, I think you're really embodying that thought when you're saying, like, if you weren't supposed to mess with this stuff or do this stuff or have to be hurt and figure out how to forgive all of them, then why would it be here?
Yeah.
Right. And so rather than thinking the goal is to escape this experience somehow or be above it somehow.
Yeah.
Escaping it seems like you're supposed to be in it. And outside of it, like Jesus would say.
Well, there's a physical escape and a mental escape. You know, Alan Watts talks about, like, when you're listening to a song, you're not listening to it to reach the end of the song. You're not trying to complete the song. That's not the goal of listening to the song.
Right.
The goal of listening to the song is just listening to it.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. Like, I think that appreciating what's right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think that idea, like, you know, you have to have money to make money. People talk about that a lot, right? If you want to invest or whatever. But to appreciate, like, do you have to have things that you could appreciate?
Mm-hmm.
Or can you just already have that? And so whatever is around you gets appreciation from you, whatever it is, right? And so now it's obviously a harder skill. But I was driving or riding, whatever, and realizing that along I-5 in this section, maybe going through the pass something, there was a lot of woods around, trees around, but there's like the normal cement barrier that's, say, waist high maybe. And there were these other things up above it, right, that were another 2 feet up. And they're like colored and they're more like flow, move a little bit. But they kind of looked not pretty necessarily, but it was an interesting design that was created around a corner and everything. And I thought, you know, somebody had to come up with this idea to make it safer, right? Like, because if somebody hits a rock up or something and it can come bouncing across and hit your windshield, right? If it's only waist high, it can definitely get you from the other side. And cars are zipping. So if it's 70, you got 140 miles an hour of something, you know, can be traveling. So it's pretty dangerous. And so I thought, well, somebody had to think, hey, this isn't safe. So let's put up these things. And then they had to go and install them all and put them up there. And then I'm like, and I feel safer. I feel like if something was bouncing down the road, it's not going to come across those right now. And we're all zipping by each other. And so I just for a second thought, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm glad somebody thought of that and then went and did it and spent the money on it and, you know, maybe had decided on a tax dollars to go to do that thing or whatever. But I don't know. So then I thought, well, that's sort of simple and simplistic. But I was thinking, oh, I wish I felt this way all the time. Like I just happened right then to be present enough to go, well, that's a cool thing. I don't know if I've seen those on that many of the roads, but that's super cool. And I'm glad people are thinking that way. Oh, that's, I feel safer driving down the road now. So that's cool. I don't know. So I think, can I appreciate just whatever is in front of me right now? And, and then I guess, therefore, then you're just more, it's a presence thing. So all these things, I guess, are ways like, can I get present? Right. And that's a tool, I guess, to say, can I stop for a minute, look around me and appreciate what's right in front of me? Like right now in this backyard, like there are so many flowers here and I've gotten really used to it. But it's super peaceful. Mm-hmm. Like there's birds chirping. Yeah. Love your song, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Marnie's been listening to it because it's come up on Spotify a couple times. Uh-huh. And because she, I think she, because she went to check it out or something, but then both of them are together.
Right.
So
right.
No Hurry.
Right.
And she was singing No Hurry yesterday morning as we were like just getting coffee and stuff. And cool. I was like, you already have that song stuck in your head? She goes, it's on my Spotify. It keeps playing every time I get back in the car.
I can't help it.
She doesn't change it. She listens through both of them. And so she's been listening to the two songs and Birds and that one. And great songs. And I love them. But Bert, if I can just sit here and see like flowers and that Marnie's taken so much time to care for, obviously the nature does it for us, but you know, she cares for all of it. And then the birds and there's chickens and, you know, and I just think, whoa, I'm just really fortunate to be here right now,
right,
in this situation and talking with you and hanging out, you know.
Well, and you're saying, I think a really key component is that it's not that you have all these things to appreciate so you appreciate them. It's that you are learning to appreciate.
Yeah.
And so you appreciate whatever's in your view.
Right, right.
It's kind of like, are you grateful because you have a lot of things to be grateful for?
Right.
Or do you develop gratitude and then you're grateful for whatever, because we know that there are people with very little that we would say on a material sense to be grateful for and yet are extremely grateful and happy, and then there are people who have what we would think of as so much to be grateful for and yet they're not appreciative of life.
Yeah.
And so this skill is to learn how to be present with, appreciate, be grateful for everything that's in front of us rather than wait for that thing to be grateful for to come into our lives or for us to achieve it.
Yeah.
And then I think in that way, the game, it continues to exist for the sake of the game rather than the completion.
Yeah.
Because you're not saying, I'm going to appreciate this game. I'm going to live in this value when it's done, when I've beaten it, but I'm already here in it. And it's just, it's all here. It's already happening.
Yeah. It's funny. I still seem to be able to tie things back. They still come up into my head. I actually asked for this, of God at the time and source, whatever universe, I asked that, like, you know, could I, if I just read the Bible every day, went through the 1 year Bible for several years in a row and thought, what better knowledge to fill my head with? If I'm just filling my head with stuff, because we are all the time, right? And my mom used to always say that if you're watching like a show that she thinks is not a good show or music that's not good, she's filling your head with this nonsense. Yeah. She's filling your head. And I was like, I like it, you know? I'm not going to go do it if it says kill everybody, whatever the song's saying, right? I always tried to find the harshest lyrics. Dang, you know?
That is metal right there.
Yeah, I always wanted metal, right? And kill them all, God sort them out, you know? And I just liked it, but then I think it is... there is some truth to what are you putting in your head. And so for many years, I thought if I just religiously read this every day, then good things will be in my head. I mean, there's a lot of killing in there and stuff, but I'm saying, but you know, the general goal of it is love. Right. And I certainly picked up on the theme after reading it several times. And from beginning to end, it is all about love. Right. So it's showing you all these different examples of love in its different forms. Right. And the yang, obviously hate in there to show that, to help illuminate love, I suppose. But I think about, you know, just the idea that I can be joyful in all circumstances is the tie-in with Paul, right? If he's in jail, if he's in plenty, whatever, right? If he's at the table, you know, wherever. And I used to think of that as just the idea of this stoicism, I guess, right? I will be happy no matter what. Like, oh, that hurts. Yep. get me again. I like it, right? Like, I can be tough, and so I'll be able to withstand every situation kind of thing, or joyful. That, like, no, I find the good in everything or whatever. But I think the joyfulness, when I think of it now in every situation, is like, can I be in jail and think, like, I've never been in a prison before. Like, this is what this is like. Whoa. Yeah, this is serious. Those are seriously thick bars. Like, okay, like, it's kind of cold. I wonder if you can tell them you want the heat different. So I'm just appreciating, like, this is, you know, this sucks. But if I'm so focused on thinking what I had before this, or what I hope to get after this, I shouldn't be here.
Rather than just being present with it.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, could you really learn that much to be like, wow, okay, so I'm here. And I think the idea that he was in prison because of something he believed in, right? It's different if, like, well, I got caught doing that horrible thing nobody's supposed to do, and I'll just dwell on that now. But anyway, so ideally joyful, meaning, you know, if I'm always fully doing the best I can with everything I know, then I may end up in jail, but it would probably be for a reason that was, like, you know.
Joy to, you know, I think as we've, you know, people like, you saw Rob Bell posted his, like, YouTube video of his joy
introduction
tour.
Joy. Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
So it's like, it's great. But he kind of talks about how joy isn't just, like, happy. Joy is this space that contains the whole spectrum of life. Right,
right, right.
And so, you know, Paul saying joy through all circumstances is like, I can be in prison, or I can go through these trials, and it's still within this beautiful phenomenon, this mystery that is my life. You know what I mean? It's all part of it.
Right.
And it's interesting because I think, as I've understood Stoicism a little bit more recently, it's actually kind of going, yeah, like, all these things that are happening, who am I to say that that's better or worse? Who am I to even say that me being happy all the time is the primary function of my life?
Right.
Maybe it is to just have the whole experience to learn and grow, to develop my character through these things. Mm. You know what I mean?
And so, yeah. Tim Ferriss talks a lot about Stoicism, and I've been wondering, I haven't actually read about it too much. So my example could be quite
more
likely,
of like
not
a,
quite how
like
it
an
is,
archetype,
but,
like, yeah, a kind of a negative. Not that it was bad.
Yeah,
it totally came across what you're saying. But as I've learned more, it doesn't mean that you're stoic in the traditional sense of, like, you don't have emotion.
Right.
But more that, like, these things that, you know, might shatter your world, you kind of just take it in stride because you're just like, well, this is. Part of my life, just as any other thing I've experienced,
right,
was.
Right.
And again, that's me totally. That is the most paraphrasing of Stoicism that's incorrect.
Right, right,
in
right.
The squeaky toys.
Nice.
I am curious, though, like, for the person out there, you know, working in and again, with COVID, it's a little different right now, but someone's in their job takes up a big portion of their thoughts and their and, you know, they're likely in the balance of trying to figure out, like, you know, this doesn't define me, but I have put a lot of my value and my own identity in this work. You know, what kind of tools or little tricks or practices can they put into their life where they're kind of reminding themselves to snap out of it a little bit, to remember, you're here, we're here in this life to live it, not to be lived by a job. So how does someone, you know, in those circumstances, who's kind of found themselves really caught up in the cycle of things, how do they zoom out, even on a daily basis? And I love the idea of conversation meditation. What other stuff like that do you seem to bring into your life, into your work?
Yeah, it's interesting because I my first thought as you were asking that was just like, oh, I don't know, I don't have it figured out. I just try to, again, I. My whole life, I felt like I've always been striving to be the best me.
Yeah.
And I just think, and I watch myself incessantly.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly evaluating how I'm doing everything. And I want it. And the funny thing is, you talked about the sunglasses earlier. Definitely one of the lenses or shades that I've had on is this need to be cool. And that takes many forms, but sometimes cool means tough. Sometimes it means unflappable. Sometimes it means knowledgeable. Sometimes it means good looking, you know, whatever. So, but it all that word, like, fits so many different scenarios where it's like, it's important to be cool. So under pressure, right, calm and things like that. So I feel like I always try to have a value. Am I that? Am I that? Am I doing that? Is that what I, you know, I need? Oh, this is tough. This is tough. Okay. Don't, you know, be calm. This is the moment. Do all the stuff you're supposed to do. Like, act calmly. Don't, yeah, I can't believe you just said, do not talk like that. We're professionals. Act like a professional, you know, ask an intelligent question that helps reveal his unknowing ways. And then he will be enlightened by himself, not me. I just nudged him in the right direction. Yeah. And so it's like, am I watching that? And am I patting myself on the back? And you're like, oh, that worked well. That worked well. He really responded to that, you know? And obviously there are times where I can just get in the game. Cause I've played it so long that I don't think that in depth every time I'm doing something. But I guess what I'm saying is that when then you ask a question like, what are the tips? And you're like, oh, how do I do it? Like, what is the secret sauce? I don't know that there is one, but this, I guess for me, and I've been doing it more lately, some recent experience has been that if you're taking time to be quiet alone, where you call it meditation or whatever, and a lot of times, you know, I was wanting to pray and feeling a real burden to pray daily, not just when I felt I needed something, but like, oh, there should be time set aside where that's what you do. And it's very similar to meditation, obviously. It's just the focus of what you're kind of thoughts and are more around God and thinking you're listening to me, I'm going to bring out things that are on my heart or whatever, versus meditating where I like the idea of just really being more at one with being present and trying not to flip over every thought that pops into your head and look at it, but just let them float by and focus on your breath. And so both accomplish something though of like, you've learned what it means to stop and center your thoughts and think, like, even if you're going to pray, you don't like, well, it's like, cause it's like, man, it's like this guy, I was like, it's like, okay, like we have time. We've sat down to pray here. Like, okay, wait, okay. What's more important? What's more important? Okay. Forget about the money thing. I said, okay. Actually, my dad's like not feeling as good anymore. Like that. I should like, gosh, what am I doing? Okay. Let me focus on the importance. Okay. Let's talk about Africa. Try it. Like, we need more resources there. And then I'll work down to my dad and me and all whatever. But I would sometimes do that. Like, let me get my thoughts in priority order here. I'm just whining about like, my knee really hurts. I wish my knee didn't hurt, you know? And so anyway, overdoing that, praying different times or meditating, you get this sense of like, I understand. I've practiced enough. Just like if you practice anything to where I like, oh, I know what it means to stop and think and prioritize and then listen.
Judgmental, and of course it's hard to get there, but that's what we're all striving towards, is not to be judgmental but to be curious.
Right.
And because in that non-judgmental space, in that unconditional love space, you are soothing yourself.
Yeah.
You're soothing yourself. And then you're actually more effective. Not only are you on a cosmic level working out some of your shit basically, and you're alleviating some trauma and you're looking into your own soul. But then on the more material level, you're gonna actually come back with a better response because you've, in real time, you've soothed yourself through that awareness.
Yeah. But I shifted to that way of doing things later. I will say the first, if I were talking to someone 10 years ago and you asked me the same question, I had all kinds of ideas why I was so successful. And they more related to what we talked about earlier, is that idea of intuition and always knowing things would work out. And I had a high level of confidence. You know, and there were times where I identified that as I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, because I was so deeply into that faith of like, of course there's this bigger force than us that wants us all to do well. And so if I'm trying my hardest, I'll be rewarded with, and maybe my parents gave me that, which I'm thankful for. If I'm trying my hardest, I'll be rewarded. I don't always have to win. And I don't always have to be better than everybody around me. But if they see that I'm trying my hardest, then I'll be valued, right? And I'll, you know, things will go well. And so I believed in that. So if, as long as I was really doing everything I could do, I was pretty good at being able to like, well, there's no sense in worrying now. And that's part of my reading the 1 year Bible all the time. It's like, you know, worry doesn't add a year to your life, you know, and all you can do is what you can do. And then the worry does nothing. So then you just sit back and trust that like, it's all going to be fine. And then my way of wanting to be still a rational human, because people are like, it's not always fine. They could die. You know, is I was like, well, in the end, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, maybe this conversation's going to go south. But later that conversation will help me do that conversation better. So I'm saying in the end, not right now. I'm not saying right now it's going to be fine. It continues to suck. I really ran a lot off of like, how do you do it when it gets harder and harder? I was like, I just kept trusting if I just do the best I can and always be honest, like, so I don't ever have anything to like, oh, I hope they don't find that out. Right. Just always be honest, do the best I can. It'll go well. Like things will go well. And it was true. I mean, some of those things I really took to heart and modified my life around those principles, and they proved true. So it's hard to say, like, if somebody's like, you should believe this, it's true. I'm like, I agree. But it's not like you have to believe this because it's the only way to believe. But it's like, no, but actually, if you do believe in these things, the things they promise do happen. I'm just saying, you could do it. But maybe that happens in other religions too. And people have seen the proof of, no, I'm staying with this because when I've stayed with this, these things have happened. And so those are locked together pretty tightly, you know?
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, there's no one way to do it. There's not one thing to subscribe to that is going to, you know, make it all easier for people and is going to be a shortcut to success. And I guess from my own perspective,
I have to say this just because it's popped in my head. It's like, you're in the show no matter what. You're going to get it. Like, you're actually going to get it. You're already in. The admission's been paid. Somebody else paid it. You're here. You're in. So you don't actually have to do it any certain way. Not only is there not only one way, there are as many ways as there are people on the planet, because that's the plan. The plan is for everyone to be unique and not all, like, if we all think the same thing, we'll all get to the same place we're thinking of.
Right.
It's like, no, it's already all happening and you're just here and you're a part of it. You can't really do it wrong is the thing. And that sounds hard to say because, like, well, aren't there bad things?
Right.
You know, killing someone or doing something else. And of course those are bad and hurtful, but it's just like, I guess my point is like, you can't like, oh shoot, I didn't believe the right thing. So it's not happening to me.
Or didn't have the right job.
Because the happening is almost the after this.
Right.
Well, of course you get to be here, but you're not going to get to do the next thing.
Right.
Nobody knows what that next thing is.
Right.
And what the rules really are. We're all just making up these rules. So it's like, I mean, it doesn't mean I've thrown everything out. I feel like we're all been inside us. We're born with this thought that if you really seek hard, what you'll find is that it is about love. Yeah. It's not that at the very end you'll find out hate was really the answer to everything. None of us believes that's going to be true. Or selfishness was the answer to everything, right? Yeah. So it's like we all know love's the highest. And I guess that's born. We're born with that, right? So, but how many paths are there to loving? What does it look like to love? Does love look like you have to say these five words and stand and then kneel and that's love? Or does love look like I see you and I'm thankful I get to?
Prioritizing just your love is the kind of the highest order of things. Then when something isn't bringing love out of you or isn't bringing more love into a situation, just putting that in its healthy place, knowing it's not, you know, something that doesn't call out more love in you, you don't need to prioritize that. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean that you don't play certain games here and there that aren't as, you know, high positive vibes as other games. You know what I mean? Sometimes you have to, maybe you're listening to this and you have to wake up and go to a job tomorrow that, or get a job right now that, like, you don't feel like you're your best self when you're there. You're most loving when you're there. But I guess then all we're saying is just remember that. Remember that you are something that's deeper than what's defined by this.
Right.
Maybe you can take actions to get to a place where you are getting to do the kind of work or live a kind of life that draws the most love out of you, that allows you to live the most fully, experience this life, this one life, the most fully. But it starts with just that priority of what is important, that I do all these things, that I accomplish all these goals, or that I'm living.
Well, and this is just an interesting thought, but like, I feel like that's how you have to think of it. I've labeled this an interesting thought.
Thank you.
So this will be an interesting thought. That's how you should think of this when I say it. Is that it's like the idea of being joyful in all situations. Like, ideally, at some point, I can get to the level of saying, I am loving at the highest level I can, and I'm not dependent upon my work to be like this, it draws this love from me. I was like, no, that this is my practice is, let's say if you're going to meditate or how are you going to do it, is I'm trying to get to the point where I can be as connected to this loving source as possible so that that's what comes out. But when things come up, you know, the idea that, you know, when you're totally unconsciously just reacting to something, it's sort of, what are you made of?
Right.
Without being able to think or plan or say the nice thing, or five things came to mind, I'll pick the good one to say. Uh-huh. It's like, no, I just reacted. Well, I was thinking, and maybe this is my parents drilling this into me, but it's like this idea that, you know, whatever I fill my head the most with will be what accidentally comes out if I'm not controlling my words.
Most instinctually.
Instinctually. Yeah. What you'll bring to my mind when a situation happens is a biblical thing and a biblical response to that thing, which to me then felt like a good response, a wise response. I wanted to be wise.
Yeah.
And because I thought Solomon prayed for wisdom and he got a bunch of money. And I told you that one before, but just that idea of, like, I thought I couldn't not get out of it. I'm like, no, he actually wanted the wisdom. That's why he got the money.
Right.
You're just trying to say you want the wisdom so you can get the money. Right. No, I really do want the wisdom. And the money. So anyway, I just think it's like a choice, right? That, like, can I choose to be loving all the time so that when I go to work, I'm choosing that. And I'm thinking, well, this is interesting because it does draw love out of me because it's so annoying.
Yeah.
So an annoying place that you don't like to work could be a great place
to
draw love out of you.
Because everyone else feels what you're feeling.
Yeah,
and they need love.
Yeah. And I can negatively bond with people and spiral downward. Yeah, doesn't this suck? Our insurance is so lame.
Yeah.
You know, they get so much better. And we just negatively bond every day at lunch or whatever about this boss or that boss or how bad things are. And you kind of like it. Like, I like these people. We're friends through negativity.
Right.
And that happens.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, like, no, I'm going to go the other route. Like, I'm going to turn things around. I'm going to try to use love in this place to make people feel differently about it and to make myself feel differently, right?
Yeah.
It's as much selfish as, like, I want to act positive because then maybe I'll get some back and we'll all feel better. I can't just talk bad all day. It's like, it's killing. Yeah. I'm going to have to quit. Like, I can't just keep negatively bonding.
It's not good for you. It's not good for anyone.
Yeah. So I guess then you can just take that to every situation, right? Can I just bring love into every situation? It's like, this sucks. Oh, you just broke your leg. Oh, that's terrible. So what does love look like? Oh, geez, can I help? What are you doing? Do you need water? What? You know, okay, love's coming out. This is a horrible situation. Yeah, so love. Pour love onto it, you know. And you're hoping that that's going to, you know, that's the response. Hopefully the response is that versus a lot of times fear is the unconscious or anger or whatever.
Well, man, I guess for all the little tangents we went off, it's a really roundabout way, and in kind of looking at you and your example, it's really a roundabout way of saying you've understood in your own life that there are as many paths as there are people, but it's more about being aware and being present with and seeing people and love not just as an, you know, not just as words, not just as an action, but also as kind of holding an unconditional, non-judgmental space for others, for yourself.
Yeah.
And then whatever you do, whether it's, whether you're an artist or you work within kind of more spiritual circles or you work high up in the business world, pretty much wherever you're at and whatever your life looks like and the way your life is ordered, just to bring that level of awareness, that non-judgment when you're interacting with people in your workspace, when you're judgmental towards yourself. These are all just ways of coming back and reminding ourselves, hey, like, it's okay. Like, this is what I'm here to do. This is just part of the experience. And in some ways, it's just I don't need to take it all as seriously as I've been taking it. Bring it down to really kind of simple terms. I want to be present because I want to get as much as I can out of this life. And I feel like presence is the key to extending our minutes and our hours and kind of enlarging them, you know, and getting extracting all the juices out of them. And so to be loved and to love in that way is to me one quick way to know that you're getting more out of our what is a short time for all of us here. So
yeah, good stuff.
Cool, man. I think we did it.
Phew.
Thank you. Come now, be still and notice your breath. As sure as the sun sets in the west. Come now, be still. Watch your energy rise. As strong as the moon carries the tide. Be anxious for nothing.
anxious for nothing.